A pair of arrests following a fire on board a British ferry. Charles de Ledesma tells us more.
Two men have been arrested following a fire on a North Sea ferry. One on suspicion of arson and another on suspicion of fighting. Although no one was seriously injured in the fire, six people were airlifted to hospital for treatment of smoke inhalation and over 20 others treated on board for smoke-related injuries. The ferry carrying over 900 passengers was on its way to Amsterdam in Holland when the fire broke out on Saturday night. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Seven-time Formula One driving champion Michael Schumacher has been hospitalized after suffering a head injury while skiing in the French Alps. The AP's Sarah DiLorenzo reports local police say Schumacher was wearing a helmet when he had a hard fall.
He was medevaced to a local hospital and then taken to what we can presume is a larger hospital in the city of Grenoble.
There is no word on Schumacher's condition. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis on this sunny, beautiful day here in Washington.
Yeah,
Nikki
beautiful.
And I just ice skated into the studio. It's
fabulous. I want to go to the pool. I want to lay out, get a tan.
I know you do.
I know.
It's not going to happen.
Not
We're
today.
Not going to Florida either.
No.
Tough noogies.
We've got a
rock and roll show here
we
today.
Do.
The man is here with us. We love this guy. James Beard award-winning chef Roberto Dona is in. He's in with his partner, and we're going to be talking about their new restaurant adventure coming up soon, Alba Osteria. It's an homage to Piemonte. Si.
Of course.
Say something in Italian. Jeez. If I say something in Italian, you say something in Italian, all right? Your turn.
I have to say it correctly. Somebody has to.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He is dissing your Italian.
Accidenti.
It was very good.
Thank you. And later in the show, we have the dairy evangelist on with us, Warren Taylor. He is the owner of Snowville Creamery. We've been already digging into his delicious yogurts this morning. He's going to talk all about his new dairy products, and we're going to get into some dairy education in studio. Also, if you've opened up the Washington Post magazine section today, you saw the two-star review of Chef Tim Ma. Lucky us, we have him in studio.
How
yes,
did we do
bravo.
That? The angels are singing.
So we're going to be talking with Tim about his original restaurant, Maple Avenue, right?
And, yeah.
And then Water and Wall, his newest one in Arlington.
Yeah, don't forget the new one.
I know.
And Michelle Kayal is one of the founders of American Food Roots. It's a really fascinating digital publication that tells America's food story state by state.
It's very cool.
I really want to know what's going on in Mississippi. Not really.
And of course, it wouldn't be a Foodie and Beast show without a little bit of wine. And we're starting it off with Tom Finnegan, who's been on the show before quite a while ago. He is a certified wine specialist, but he is founder of the new Vine Crush. It's an education and consulting service on wine, beer, and spirits, specifically in the D.C. area. And he's getting us started with something really fascinating
well, wait,
this morning.
Wait, I got to ask a question,
okay.
Tom.
Okay.
What's a certified wine specialist? I want to be that.
No,
well,
you don't.
It takes a lot of hard work,
oh,
a lot
mind.
Of years, and a lot of drinking.
That seems like a lot of work. Never mind. The work, the drinking part, I don't mind. It's the
exactly.
hard work.
Well,
so what do you do? How do you do it?
How do you do it? Well, there's a couple of ways you can do it. There's the Society of Wine Educators. Obviously, you've had sommeliers in here from the mm-hmm. Quartermaster Sommeliers, which is also based out of England. I chose the route of the Wine and Spirits Education Trust. WSET.co.uk, mm-hmm. which is based out of London. It's represented in over 60 countries on five continents.
So you got to go to England to do this?
No, I didn't have to go to England. I actually started in Boston and worked my way through D.C. and finished off by taking some classes in Philadelphia for it. But the diploma takes about 2 years. And unlike, say, the sommelier, which is more service-oriented, this is more market-oriented. You learn about wine as a commodity. What drives the market? What makes people purchase what they do, what becomes more popular. In fact, one of the research papers I had to write was on the rise of the Asian wine consumer and producer.
Damn, that sounds like way too
much
work.
I didn't know what all the differences were, because there are several varieties of certification.
Correct, yes.
And people, you know, tout whichever ones they have, but I didn't realize one was more service-oriented and one was more towards marketing.
Well, with the sommelier, obviously, that is restaurant
service-oriented.
Right,
of course, they need to be hospitable.
Exactly.
And that's,
she was going to say, wait, because we're married, she was going to say hostile. But...
Only to you. Go ahead. sorry.
No, go ahead. I mean, and that's why it's like the people that do the diploma end up working for auction houses, end up doing more, you know, professional wine writing, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually consulted on by the Masters of Wine, and the outgoing president, you've probably already met her, is Jancis Robinson,
okay,
who did the event at Union Market a couple of weeks ago where released the new World Atlas of Wine.
Right. Very mm-hmm. cool. Okay, so tell us what we're starting with today. I'm surprised by this, so.
Well, you got to start with a little bubbly, right? I mean, it is 11.
It is, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to pop it?
That's what Nikki gargles with at home.
Yep. Well, actually, you know, we were going into the holidays, and one of the things that always gets me for any holiday season, whatever holiday you celebrate, is people, I prefer to go the extra mile, get something a little extra,
mm-hmm.
spend a couple of more dollars. And everybody now is getting so much great artisan food, so many great farmers, dairy people, obviously, who are here today, meat, everything. But then they walk into a wine store and say, hey, what's good for $10?
Right.
And, you know, and you're putting everything else in your body and you're enjoying it and you're consuming it. But sometimes people just, they short end the wine, but there's really no excuse. So what I have today is Kirkland Champagne from Costco.
I know. It's still.
I've been to the Costco winery. It's really impressive.
So,
you know, when the trucks back up, they make that beeping
noise.
Tell us, because now you said this is a grower's champagne.
Yes, it is.
I mean, we just did a whole thing on growers here a couple of weeks ago. So tell us, is this a quality champagne and what does it go for?
It's a high-quality champagne.
Mm-hmm.
It's done by two growers in Verzé and Epernay.
Okay.
It is actually picked out. Costco employs a master of wine. His name's Flint, actually based out of Louisiana.
Okay.
And he negotiates contracts with people all over the world, from France to the United States to Chile, Argentina,
mm-hmm.
and finds these great deals because they buy in volume. The point of this wine, though, is that this is $19.99.
Okay.
Most people think, oh, champagne, that's $40. I'll just go for $6.99 cava.
Right.
Or Prosecco.
Yeah, don't start dissing Prosecco. Not with Chef here.
Not dissing Prosecco, but Prosecco is one type of wine. It's aromatic. It's fruity. It's fragrant. It's
nice
great for that.
Nice recovery, Tom.
No. But it's,
that
it's,
education just paid off. Because Roberto was going to stick it
but
to you.
It's a different wine. It's a different wine.
It is a different
and
wine.
And it has
I'm
a different quality, and it goes with different foods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when people say one wine is an alternative to another wine. If you want something that's champagne, just get champagne, not something that's like champagne.
Okay.
All right.
Perfect.
Well, having now mentioned Roberto,
can we all say cheers?
Everybody
cheers
say cheers
studio.
And take a
cheers.
Cheers. And we have in with us Hakan Ilan and Roberto Dona, and they're in talking about their new restaurant, Alba Osteria. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things, but just Roberto, first of all, is one of our oldest and dearest helpers and friends.
Mm-hmm.
He helped get the list started many years ago. And so every time a check comes in, I say, thank you, Roberto. As opposed to thank you, Lord. But he's a James Beard Award winner. He was picked by Esquire magazine as the Chef of the Year in 2012.
Yeah.
And Al Dente was named one of the top 20 restaurants in the U.S. by Esquire. And that ain't bad.
No, it's not.
Is it?
No, we don't complain.
Yeah.
We just take it.
Can we just start with a question about Alba Osteria?
Yes.
Isn't it, usually we were talking
Osteria
about this, like, Osteria
Alba.
Is it Italian-wise? Is that correct?
Italian-wise?
You know what I mean? Is it usually Osteria, then
something?
The word?
No, you should put the name of the restaurant first, and then...
Oh, so everybody else is doing
everybody
it wrong.
Everybody else.
Then,
because a lot of people...
Osteria is like a ristorante,
si.
Like a restaurant. So
right.
You don't say ristorante...
Alba.
Alba, or ristorante...
Right.
Al dente.
All right, we just burned a lot of time
okay.
on that.
Okay, well, I was just curious.
All right,
all.
So
it's a good question.
But let's
so
talk
there you go.
About. Stop yammering. I want to talk to this man.
Okay.
So you've been in town a long time, and you were close buddy.
Since 1980.
Jean-Louis, when the when the food scene began to change. Yeah. You had Galileo, Il Radicchio. Now you've got al dente, and you've got Osteria Alba coming.
Mr. Nakane is al dente.
Well, I understand.
Mr. Nakane. My position changed now.
Yeah, we are good. I understand. Very good team. But I mean, talk about how the food scene has changed a little since you got here, because people's palates and tastes have changed, and the whole restaurant scene has exploded.
Well, I can just tell you one thing: how we changed. When I came in 1979, you know, I ordered herbs, you know, rosemary, sage, you know, my
first order. In time.
Yeah, and I got. Little round plastic bottles, container, right? With dry herbs inside, which I never saw in my life. You know, I was only 20 years old, you know. But so, and there was no fresh herbs then.
So there was a big change today. Yeah. Think of the kind of product, like, that is available not just to chefs today, but to the public today.
Oh yeah, well, the first fresh basil, local basil I saw in 1981 was from Charlie from Rock Farm. What is them? He had a farm in Shenandoah Valley.
Okay.
And they were walking on K Street with bags of basil and trying to go and sell them around. Mm, because at that time, K Street was all the street of all the restaurants.
True farmer's market.
Yeah, and they didn't know what to do. He said, I just planted a football field last year, and now I have it here. I don't know what to do.
All right, so you rocket forward to Alba Osteria, and suddenly the world, not suddenly, but the world has changed so much, and it's so competitive, and it's sourcing and sustainability, and even diners.
Well, that's only if that's your message as a restaurant.
No, but I'm saying the world, the people, consumers are so much more food-oriented.
Well, and educated.
Interested.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Hakan, both of you, talk about the new restaurant and what you're doing there to bring in diners and make things different and special for them.
Well, actually, to your point, the reason we decided about Alba Osteria, we were in Piedmonte region with Roberto last year.
Why weren't we invited?
It was a private tour. We can do a public one.
And, and we, you know, I love the region. It's the food was amazing. And, of course, we had the project in the drawing board, and we decided to specialize this restaurant after the Piedmonte region and specializing more about the authentic food from that region, and that's where Roberto is from. We kind of wanted to theme the restaurant rather than just being an Italian restaurant. And to your point, yes, the market is much more competitive. You have to really distinguish yourself more from the other restaurants, and we are very specialized in Piedmonte region. There are a lot of new dishes.
So what is it of the Piedmont region? I mean, what are some of those dishes that, for people who may not be familiar with them, tell us a little bit about them.
Well, sure. Like today here, I brought some roasted pepper in bagna cauda sauce. You know, bagna cauda is a classical sauce from Piedmont. Mm-hmm. It is garlic, anchovies, and olive oil all cooked down together, and then usually, like we serve in al dente, you know, we serve it in the fuyote, a terracotta container with a little fire under and all the vegetable around. And that's what family they do. They put in the middle of the table and everybody dips inside and they eat this tasty. And drink a lot of wine with it.
Right,
you know?
Of course.
I'd like to point out something. You brought in a lot of food, but it seems to be stacked in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm going to start to give it to you.
I want to go back to al dente, because Hakan, that's your place as well. You guys did this. The seats at the bar, looking into the kitchen, where you can come in, and it's a fixed price.
Yes.
No. Menu.
Roberto's four.
And right. It's what, $85 for the meal, and then there's a pairing.
12 courses.
But that's an 18. Amazing. Yeah.
Is 18 that, courses.
Yeah.
Because you can't help yourself.
We kind of inspired with that from old Galileo. I mean, Roberto used to have his own laboratory. And we wanted to do something, you know, unique about that, and you know, to show really to people Roberto's talents that were not familiar with his talents. And it has become a huge success. I mean, we are really booked throughout May, I think. May and June, I think.
Wow.
And at the new location, we have a chef table, which is going to seat 12. So.
But is that going to be where Amy will be? Amy Brandon?
Yes.
I love that Amy's. So it's like getting the team back together with Amy
and
Roberto.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, they were such a good team, and we'd love to, you know, we brought Amy back, and I think she's going to do a tremendous job.
Okay, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we want to talk about the wine program that you'll have at the new restaurant, and I also want to touch on a little bit that you have this fantastic Virginia wine program at Al Dente, right? Am I saying it right?
Al Dente.
Al Dente.
That's
so
what happens when you marry a Jewish girl from New Jersey.
I butcher everything.
Speaking the Italiano.
Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. When is the last time you went to bed hungry? Right here in the Washington metro area. Nearly 150,000 children are going to bed hungry each night. Help the Capital Area Food Bank make this holiday season special for children in need. For every dollar you donate, the food bank can provide 3 meals. Visit capitalareafoodbank.org or call 202-644-9800 to make a donation today.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Hey, welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to James Beard Award-winning chef Roberto Donna and Hakan Ilan about their new restaurant at down on I Street, 425 I Street.
Well, it's not open yet.
Alba Osteria, that's coming up, opening on 12/15. I never get to finish on this show.
Wait. When is it opening?
Actually, December 26th is our official date now.
Okay. Slight construction issue.
Yes.
All right. Whatever. And also about Al Dente. One of the things that I noticed in the plans from the new restaurant and where you guys are at Al Dente is that there's a really sizable Virginia wine program, which is kind of, you know, a non sequitur for an Italian chef and a guy who still kind of speaks with an Italian accent.
You love,
So you like Virginia wines. Why? What's going on there?
Well, you know, it goes back to what you were talking about before, you know, using, you know, promoting local products and everything. So, you know, last year, I've been going to Virginia for a long time to see a winery, you know. But 7-8 years ago, I really got discouraged and I said, you know, well, they still have a lot of work to do, you know, on their wine. So last year, a friend of mine started to bring me to the wineries and I saw that the winemaking totally changed.
It's really changed.
Totally improved and is amazing the job that a lot of this winery they did, you know. Of course, you know, not all the wines are good, you know, they still have a lot of work to do on it. But, you know, if you know how to pick the proper wine, Virginia is doing a superb job on winemaking.
Well, we saw on your list, I mean, you have Linden and you have Barbersville.
Well, Luca, I mean, the Barber, of course, a bunch of Italians would get together, so he would like Barbersville.
Right, but, you know,
Luca is an old friend.
There are some really, and I mean, Tom could probably speak to this too, but I mean, there are some spectacular Virginia wines.
Oh, yeah.
Every year gets better.
Better. RDV, you know, has really hit the ground running. I mean, and Early Mountain Vineyards. I mean, there's some really incredible things going on out there.
I think Barbersville was definitely an anchor for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They went straight to Italy, got great winemakers there, started doing really traditional wines in Virginia. And I think that's, you know, there's so many great producers, but I think Barbersville was one of the first ones to really.
Well, Jonin, the owner of the winery, is the biggest wine maker in Italy. So, you know,
see,
he was
really
a serious guy.
I just had to throw some Italian in there. See,
yeah. See.
Unfortunately, we got to move along because it's a jam-packed show. But I want to make sure, Hakan, do the promotion for Alba Osteria, where it is, where you can find it on the web. Double check when you're going to be open.
We are going to be opening on the 26th of December.
Mm-hmm.
It's albaosteriadc.com is the website. And we will also be open for New Year's Eve, both locations, Al Dente and Alba Osteria.
Are you doing anything special for New Year's Eve?
Yes, we do. We do have a special menu. And mm-hmm. we are also going to have a little music to go along with it.
Mm.
And it's going to be a special New Year's Eve menu.
Oh, and are you doing a Feast of the Fishes?
Oh, yeah. It started already.
It did?
Yeah, so on the 1st of December. We do it all the way to the 21st.
How many
24th,
courses?
24th, and maybe we go to the 30th. We don't know yet.
How many courses?
Seven courses, all fish.
Okay.
Nice.
Fabulous.
And Christmas, all the boiled stuff, just like we had in Florence. Oh, my God.
No, it's not all
We
boiled.
Landed in Florence a couple of years ago on Christmas Day, and everything was boiled. I thought I was going to die.
No, we have everything.
Can I just say, we were in Florence. Yeah. So I can think of worse things
bad.
To be on Christmas
it wasn't
Day.
Bad. Well, it beats Kensington by a mile. All right, well, we're going to switch over here.
Yes.
We've got a gentleman with us who is really fascinating. He's known, he's got a whole religion with him. He's called the Dairy Evangelist, and his name's Warren Taylor.
Oh my God, this looks so good.
He's the owner of Snowville Creamery, and he's in talking about a whole new, really, generation of cultured dairy products.
Chef, you can sit.
That are introduced, that they've been introduced at Whole Foods. We are regular purchasers of his milk.
Yes, we are.
And we just tasted his yogurt for the first time. It's awesome.
The whole studio tasted his yogurt.
I want to start with you, kind of who you are, where you've been, and what you've done, because you originally were a dairy engineer.
What does that mean?
How do you build a cow, actually? and you were working with Dannon and Land O'Lakes and Dairy Farmers of America, and now you're a farmer.
Well,
how that? Well, I mean, you know, you're on the farming end and the production end. How did that happen?
Well, you can think of me as being in the middle between the farmers and the consumers. You know, there's farmers making wonderful grass-fed milk. But they're, you know, very much in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And until those farmers have a place where that milk can be processed and made into something,
mm-hmm.
in our case, bottling milk and cream and now making yogurt, in other cases, making cheese, that milk just ends up going into the commodity milk pool. So you need to have somebody who's a processor.
You mean it gets poured in with the other milk?
No, it all gets picked up with the same. If you don't, if you have extraordinary grass-fed milk,
right.
like we do, it just goes into the pool with all the commodity milk if you don't have a facility to turn it into a value-added product that you can take to the market. So we have a relationship with our farmers
mm-hmm.
and a relationship with our consumers.
Well,
we're kind of the pivot.
But so before Snowville, as a dairy engineer, I mean, you've been doing this for 40 years. Grass-fed, pasture-raised, I mean, these are all buzzwords that have come out in the last 10 years. So when you started... let's just talk about how things have changed to where we are now.
That's a great question, Nikki, because if you go back 40 years ago, most of the milk in America was grass-fed.
Oh, really?
You know, so the transition to confined...
Yeah, we said Thompson Dairy would deliver it and we'd pull the cream off the top of the...
Absolutely.
Well, since I'm not 40 years old yet, I mean, these are just things I wouldn't know.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's too bad this isn't TV.
So there's been a transition... You know, from the vast majority of farms being truly small family farms where
mm-hmm.
cows were out on grass
mm-hmm.
to being large confinement operations where cows stand on concrete and are fed corn and soybeans.
Right.
And so now the organic, you have to credit the organic dairy industry for bringing back the recognition of these important things. But
was it the organic industry? Because I feel like some people are very confused by organic and pasture raised and... You know, our understanding is we've had people come in to talk about humane certified, and then if you hear pasture raised, that means grass fed, and that these are healthy, humane certified animals. Is
yes,
that correct?
I think it's a fair assumption. You know, there's different kinds of certifications, and
mm-hmm.
I think they all serve a good purpose.
Right.
I think the most important thing, the most important idea that we want to bring forward is that we're not trying to meet some standard. We're trying to have continuous improvement and constantly refine the way we make our products.
Well, I've got a question because there's a lot of information in there about how you try and maintain sort of minimal processing, pasteurization, homogenization, and all that. Why does that affect the milk? I mean, you know, I've always thought that those processes are done to basically ensure the bacteria is not in the milk and blah, blah, blah. So why keep it to a minimum?
Well, the pasteurization is to make milk safe, but it also the level of heat treatment affects the shelf life.
Sure.
And so everybody's looking for longer distribution chains. We date our products, our milk, our cream, our yogurts, with the shortest dates in the American dairy industry, not because they necessarily spoil faster, mm-hmm. but because we want to use the dates to keep fresh dairy products in the marketplace as compared to using the dates to extend distribution.
Okay.
And fresher dairy products are better. There's mm-hmm. no question about it. Now, homogenization is a process.
Right.
That's a lot of often confused. Homogenization is a process by which the fat that occurs in milk, which is can be almost as big as a period on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. is made so microscopically small that it continues to remain evenly distributed in the milk, even though it's lighter. Hmm. And so it's a process that goes back into the Depression days, World War II, that was part of making dairy products kind of last longer in the marketplace. One
right.
of the our milk, the cream rises to the top, mm-hmm. and it tends to get a little cloddy, a little thick after about a week or 10 days.
Okay.
Well, if you want to have a 3-week date on it, that's unacceptable. We're doing the opposite thing. Back when there was a dairy processing plant in every small community and you got your milk every day or every other day,
right.
homogenization wasn't something that was required. It was really part of an industrialization and an extension of the time that milk was
like
in distribution.
Ag, the whole thing.
Right.
Yes.
So I got to jump in because, first of all, I don't know anything about anything. Is crème fraîche essentially sour cream? Are they synonymous?
Oh, no. It's crème fraîche is, you could call it the French version of sour cream.
Right.
But I really like to say that it's older than that. This, you know, dairy products originally, everybody admired the cream, wanted the cream. It was the highest value product. And it always went sour because people didn't have refrigeration. So the first thing to understand about dairy products is we didn't used to consume sweet milk or sweet cream. These things were always soured, either by somebody intentionally souring them or by the organisms that were just there in the environment.
Okay.
So this is an age-old product. Anybody that had dairy cows skimmed off the cream, it mm-hmm. soured, and that was the creme de la creme.
Well,
I have to say something
because and it's got nothing to do with my Jewish heritage. I've been eating sour cream right out of the buckets. Half my body's sour cream. Mm-hmm. This is the best sour cream I've ever eaten in my life. I took one spoonful.
It's not sour cream. It's creme fraiche.
It is. It says creme fraiche sour cream. Let's not argue.
I'm with
this
David.
Is simply the best. This blew my taste buds out of my face.
It's
this
yummy.
Is delicious.
Well,
is this at Whole Foods too?
It is.
Go there right now. I'm not double dipping. This is a different spoon.
You can all have your own. It's over
there. Oh my God!
I know it's good.
I believe that human beings are hardwired to appreciate these flavors. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I want to help people get past the idea that this is a guilty pleasure. To me, creme fraîche is a tonic. It's
well, wait,
a medicine.
Isn't it an artery clogger, though? I mean,
horse feathers. You know,
horse
I don't.
Horse feathers? 23 Skidoo.
I believe that these.
Oh, my God. David has found his partner in crime.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm off the show.
there's a substance called conjugated linoleic acid, CLA. Google it. It's the most potent immune boosting substance known to man.
So I can eat all of this I want?
Eat all that you want. Have at it. But you'll find that you only want a reasonable amount because it has such a high level of satiety,
right.
both with the fat and particularly
satiety.
With the flavor.
Means you're only, you will be satiated.
What the hell does that mean, boy?
You will be satiated. You will enjoy it.
No, I'm
instead of being
I'm
a glutton.
Always, I'm
with
the
it.
Guy that used to eat bricks of cream cheese.
We
I
all
could
know
eat this
what
whole
you
thing.
Did.
Oh, well, you see, when you have all that rich flavor in your mouth, then you have a nice swallow of good, sharp wine to rinse mm-hmm. it, and then you want that rich flavor again.
All right, this is Snowville Creamery Creme Fraiche. Go eat it.
Okay, but so now let's just talk. We have a minute, and then we'll come back to you. But so with your yogurts, I think not only do you have really interesting flavors, but your plain yogurt says 6%.
6%, 6% butterfat.
Okay.
Milk from cows is about 4%.
Okay.
Whipping cream is 40%,
mm-hmm.
just as a comparison.
Okay, that's helpful.
But I think if you go back in history, really, cows gave a lot less milk. It was higher in protein, higher in fat.
Mm-hmm.
So our 6% plain yogurt is probably more like the yogurt of 200 years ago.
Okay.
Than yogurt today.
Because that's just not something
when Russians
you see.
Live to be 690.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Fooding the Beast. When we come back, we're going to talk about lemon ginger yogurt and coffee cardamom yogurt.
We're going to hear more from Tom Finnegan. This is really good champagne, too. Nice job.
We'll be back in just a sec.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why isn't 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
When I served in Iraq and Afghanistan, my buddies and I would do anything for each other. That's important whether you're in a firefight or fighting to regain your life. When I came home injured, there are people I can count on, like DAV.
DAV, Disabled American Veterans, stands behind America's veterans to make their transition back home easier with free services and help getting the benefits they've earned. Help us fulfill the promise to our men and women who served. Go to DAV.org to learn more.
What do you want to be when you're older?
When I'm older, I want to be a singer. That's my goal.
An organizer of like do-gooders.
I want to be a media mogul.
When I'm older, I want to be anything but the one that doesn't fit in, the one that people don't love.
Everyone deserves a dream.
But some of us are depressed,
anxious,
angry,
scared,
don't feel like ourselves.
If that's you, say something.
Talk to someone. People will listen. Add your voice at oktotalk.org. Oktotalk.org.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Imagine standing at the open door of a helicopter, hovering in the middle of a storm, preparing to jump into the rough ocean below. Dangerous search and rescue missions are just one of the countless ways members of our nation's sea services put themselves at risk to protect us all. Support the members of our Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and U.S. Flag Merchant Marine by enrolling as a member of the Navy League of the United States, an advocate and voice for our nation's sea services. Learn more at NavyLeague.org.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Oh, my God. That's so good. So, Warren, we got about 90 seconds. I just want to make sure everybody knows how to find you online, what stores to find you in. And, folks, go buy this stuff.
Well, you can look on our website, Snowville Creamery, and see as we roll this out into different stores. Right now we're in about 6 of the Whole Foods stores with our cultured products. We're in 20 Whole Foods stores with our milk and cream. And we expect to be in all 20 Whole Foods stores with our cultured products by early January.
Fantastic. Today, Washington. Tomorrow's the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I don't know. I still believe in local creameries and local fresh products. So we're not really trying to go national. We're trying to carve the way for other people to do that.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's Warren Taylor at Snowville Creamery. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, Tom, back to you.
What do we got next here?
We have Decoy Merlot. One of these other things that I see a lot in the holidays is that sometimes people make recommendations of wines that people just generally don't drink year-round, Alsatian Riesling or hearty Burgundies. If somebody's been drinking Malbec or Shiraz all year long, it's a heck of a stretch to get from there to some really earthy, funky.
Well, you bring up a good thing. Can people contact Vine Crush to get tips on holiday gift giving and direction and all of that? Do you consult that way, too?
Yes, I do. VineCrushConsulting.com.
Clever insertion and segue. Like
thank that. You very much, and thank you for that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. But, I mean, is that a sort of a common thing where people would like to give wine, but they're like me and they have no idea really unless their wife tells them what to buy, what to do?
There are, but, as I said in the last segment, a lot of people look for the cheapest alternative, and they just say, oh, well, I'll grab this, and then you show up, and it's not so great. So there's always a wine professional somewhere in a store, in a restaurant, whatever, and they dedicate their career to doing that. So ask them some questions, because most of the time they'll love to share.
Let's have them ask you.
Oh, yeah, they can ask me, too. But that's what I'm there for, is for just the general layperson to kind of reach out to me. We're working on blogs, postings, Twitter, at Vine Crush.
You come in and do private classes? In other words, you go to somebody's home? And
yeah, that's something I love doing. People make that out to be... It's a great event for people to have a wine expert come into your home, talk about 3, 4, 5, 6 wines, maybe do wines with dinner, talk to you about wine pairing. We've done all sorts of different events.
That's cool.
I even had somebody in North Potomac have me come out to reenact the 1976 Paris tasting for him and his friends.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was basically to prove a point.
Can you remember any of it?
Yeah, no. It was a great night, and we went through 12 wines. six French, six American. The U.S. won again, and he started beating up on his friend who he made the bet with.
All right.
Very cool. All right.
Pour the next one. Let's get to Tim Ma. We've got rocking and rolling.
Yeah, no, we do.
So this is a propitious moment to have you in the studio.
He likes to use those big SAT words. He thinks
I didn't understand.
Just because you don't understand
smart.
What they mean, that's okay. But Tim is the chef owner of Maple Avenue out in Vienna. And, of course, his new restaurant, Water and Wall, is reviewed in today's Washington Post. And it was just perfect timing. So, hi.
How's it going?
Well, it's going good. Your story is pretty interesting because you didn't start out a chef. You mentioned about 50 times at the start that you were an engineer.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I was
not trains. You mean building things.
I did what every good little Asian boy does and who's good at math and science. I went to Georgia Tech and Johns Hopkins, got my degrees in electrical and computer engineering, and did what everybody else in this area did. I did government consulting for...
Wait, I just nodded out.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened? So let's move fast. Like, you got to wanting to open up a restaurant. You went to school.
I went to French Culinary Institute in New York City.
Right.
Externed for David Chang at Momofuku Co. Knew I was getting older very quickly. So
and had the foresight to open up a restaurant on a credit card in the middle of the recession.
We found the restaurant on Craigslist.
Wow.
And we bought it.
For people who don't know where Maple Avenue is, can you tell them where it is?
It's on Maple Avenue in Vienna.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. I just wanted
we're
to
we're very creative in
he
that
doesn't
sense.
Like anybody to no, have
but I mean,
like,
you know, like,
he just
what a
takes
question.
Away.
She asks the hardball questions.
It's in Vienna. It's the original Anita's building, if that, you know, plays to anyone. It's a little bit old. It looks like a donut shop. The dining room is 300 square feet.
It's like nine tables or something,
right? It's tiny,
yeah.
So how would you explain your cuisine there?
Eclectic American. It's on the sign. That really allowed us to really just cover anything that we wanted to do. And we're lucky enough now that we can almost cook any cuisine that we want, put it out on the table, and it just
One of the things
is it an a la carte menu, a multi-course menu? How are you doing it there?
So we've done both. So we have... the front dining room, which is just a la carte, and then we have this back, literally like tented area. It's just it's not impervious to the environment. But
that's the new in thing. So you were ahead. You were ahead of the trend.
I mean, we built it with my friends. Like it's not even, like literally on our credit card
did
with
a barn
my friends.
Raising.
Yeah, it's like it's probably you know
it's
not
very
the safest
sweet.
Thing anything. But we do a tasting menu back there sometimes.
Well, one of the things that Tom mentioned in the article is that. What's great about Maple Avenue?
Do you know
is you
him
go
personally? Because you say Tom like you know. Him.
Actually, I do know him, and so do you. So stop being a snot. Anyways, that you'll throw stuff in there at the last minute, kind of add your own. You know, you're making. It's not always the thing that you got before, which I think is great because so many restaurants pound it out.
We love to improvise, and that's literally like what we do every day. So. VIPs or just like regular customers who come in, we'll tend to start to just play, send them something out special, just because we get bored very easily, as most chefs do. They get bored in the kitchen. That's why you do an 18-course tasting menu. That's why, you know, you do like a 4-course tasting menu. Or that's why you just send out something special. You get bored. You want to do something fun.
You want to play.
Yeah.
Tell us about Water and Wall. First of all, what does the name mean?
So when we were in when I was in culinary school in New York City, we were homeless for a short period of time, and then we found a spot on the intersection of Water Street and Wall Street in the financial district, and that's where we stayed and came up with a lot of the concepts that we wanted to do. We knew that we ended up wanting to own
who's
our
the
restaurant.
We?
Yeah, who is the we?
My fiance, Joey Hernandez, who's right behind
me. She's back there. Say hi, Joey.
She's waving on radio. Radio theater of the mind, but not quite that.
So really, she's the backbone to this whole thing. I'm just sometimes.
I say that about Nikki, but we don't mean it, right?
It's quite okay. You don't have
look
to
look at
me
speechless.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm not saying that. He's not married yet.
So talk about the concept there. The food concept.
The food concept is an extension of Maple Avenue. And in the beginning, we were like, oh, we're gonna have this much bigger kitchen. We're gonna be able to do. Like a more involved concept, but we end up doing a kind of like a simpler concept because that's kind of what's working. And you know, we thought it was a bigger kitchen, but when you're doing that much more volume, which we are.
What's the seat size?
80 plus.
So that's a big difference.
That's a big difference from 9 tables to 80 plus. We had a lot to get used to.
Can you be as creative when you have basically 8 times more?
You have to be more organized.
Not when an article like this comes out, because then it's just mayhem. So, you know, even
which is
like
good news.
You can always give the stars back.
And he will do that.
Mayhem in a good way, but you know, you lose some control. Like 9 tables, Maple Avenue is so controlled. It's such a controlled environment.
It's like you're cooking for people at your dinner table. So
yeah, and so we love that. And like, you know, even a busy service is like we come out of it just feeling great. Like last night we come out of service and we're like, it feels like a train hit you. And we're just not quite used to that yet.
Okay. Well, just so for people have an idea, at Water and Wall, what would be, like, what were some of the big dishes that you served last night?
So a lot of the dishes that you see in the article, you know, and I feel bad for, you know, the guy who's having to do the dishes. You know, I was doing like the duck confit dish that you see in the article.
It sounds delicious. It's just...
Yeah, it's a great dish, and it's so simple.
Well, for those who didn't read it, explain it.
So it's, you know, simply, in this case, a sous vide duck confit, caramelized Brussels sprouts with black radish, shallots, a truffle aioli, and then a cider gastrique.
That sounds so easy. He's right.
But then there are dishes like the sweetbreads where, you know, it's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek thing where it's sweetbread served with Frank's red hot sauce, like literally Frank's red hot sauce.
You're saying it's brains that are tongue-in-cheek?
No, we have tongue in studio. Chef Roberto brought real tongue in studio.
But we like to do things like that where we just... You know, you put that ish on everything, you know, Frank's hot sauce. And we don't need to call it anything else, but literally, like, that's what it says on the menu.
And how are people responding to that?
The people who come from Maple Avenue and visit us at Water and Wall, they're used to that, where we do stuff like that. The new people who are the neighborhood people, they're like, wow, this is creative in a sense that's not creative. That it's just so simple because you're not creating the hot sauce.
Sometimes that's the best.
All right. So unfortunately, we have to wrap it up with you because we're going to bring Michelle Kayal in. But tell us, just give everybody both addresses so that they know where you are and where to find you online, please.
Maple Avenue, Vienna, 147 Maple Avenue West. Water and Wall in Virginia Square in Arlington, 3811 Fairfax Drive.
Okay. And just give the
website. Are you on Open Table or no?
We are on City Eats, both
City
restaurants.
Eats. All right. Have at it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Aren't you
so
glad
much.
I asked? Okay. All right, Tim Ma, congratulations on that review this morning.
Michelle, you got to get on over.
Michelle is one of the founders. Michelle is a food journalist, one of the founders of American Food Roots. It's an online pub, and it tells the country story state by state. And why don't we start? Hi. Why don't we just start there?
Good morning.
What does that mean? How do you get all your info? How do you do that?
No, how did you get started?
Oh, I want to know.
Let's start at the beginning.
You know, I'm going to
gatherers, men are
hunters. I was
going to
say, right. I'm going to answer Nikki first because I'm a woman and I know who's in charge in this situation.
Thank you.
So,
there we go.
There are four of us. It's me, my partner Bonnie Wolf, Carol Gunsberg, who was formerly with Scripps Howard, and Domenica Marchetti, who you all know as our premier
Italian
food writer.
Domenica and Bonnie. Bonnie was on the show just a couple weeks ago.
Yep. So the four of us have many, many, many years, many more than we'd like to say in food journalism. And we kind of all had the same idea at the same time, which is we woke up one morning and Gourmet was out of business, and Bon Appetit has become a roundup of best burger lists and things like that. And
what run by a man. It's terrible.
And what we've always wanted to talk about.
We shall overcome.
Well, you have overcome that.
What we've always wanted to talk about and what we've always written about in all of our stories are the history and culture of the foods that we eat. And as Americans, we all came here in one way or another as immigrants, except for Native Americans. And the only thing many of us could bring with us was our food. And so that is how we tell the story of our culture and who we are as a nation.
But aren't we so kind of mixed and matched
absolutely.
On a state-by-state basis? Isn't it pretty well blended?
No, actually. It's an incredibly diverse mix. I mean, we really have been very lucky in digging into the little pockets of cuisine in different places. We ran a story about something called gooey butter cake, which is literally made by one bakery in one tiny German neighborhood of St. Louis. It's been made there for, you know, I don't know, 100 years. I mean, the bakery is now out of business, but I have a friend from St. Louis, and we spent Thanksgiving together, and I brought it, and he flipped out. He was like, this is from so-and-so's bakery. I can't believe it. And the cultures are quite diverse from state to state, even the Hispanic cultures. I'm doing a story right now for a partnership that we're launching with USA Today. We're launching a partnership with USA Today in the beginning of next year.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We're really very excited. They've been great to us, and we're were getting our editorial, our content together as a team. And the first story that we're going to do for them is about Rosca de Reyes, otherwise known as king cake.
Okay.
But Hispanic cultures do king cake very differently than they do in New Orleans.
Hmm.
And so I, like a dummy, so I call, you know, the Spanish people, and because we're pinning it with Texas, because they have 88% of Texans are of 88% of Hispanic Texans are of Mexican descent.
Okay.
And so I call the Spanish folks and the Mexicans and this and that. And then I call the Puerto Ricans, and she was like, well, we don't do that. Only the Mexicans do that. And I thought, wow, okay. So she was very offended. So it's amazing how different the cultures are.
Well, and I think your point taken about, you know, like this little cake up in St. Louis, I mean, all around the region, we think now because we're such a world culture when it comes to our coffee and our pasta or French food. I mean, we feel like we all know so much, but so many things are still very regional. So how do you go about finding?
Wait, you got to hold that question. We have to take a break.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to know how you guys go about doing your research and finding these little pockets.
Okay.
Okay. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Misuse of prescription pain medication can lead to addiction, brain damage, even death. If you or someone you know are abusing prescription medications, call the Addiction Treatment 24-Hour Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. Prescription drug misuse ruins lives. Don't let it happen to your friends or you. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
If your home or apartment was built before 1978, renovations can spread lead paint dust that can cause children 6 and under to grow up with behavior issues and even severe learning disabilities. That's why, if you're having work done, the EPA now requires that your contractor be lead safe certified. Don't let lead paint take away your child's future before it even begins. For a lead safe certified contractor in your area, visit www.epa.gov/getleadsafe or call 1-800-424-LEAD.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, hear me. Come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast talking to Michelle Kyle. Do you want to ask your question again so people out there can remember
We were talking about? I mean, the whole point of what you guys are all doing with American Food Roots is finding these little pockets of culture that still exist. We feel today that we're such this global economy, especially when it comes to food. I mean, you can go to Whole Foods now and find so many things, or go to a farmer's market and find, you know, products like Chef Roberto said earlier in the show. I mean, when he first came to the United States, he couldn't get fresh basil. Mm-hmm. So we have all these things available to us. So we seem to forget that there are these regional specialties that do not cross lines. So tell me about the research that you do to find these things.
Well, excuse me. I mean, that was one of the great impetuses, frankly, for us starting to begin with. I mean, we're all journalists by training. I've written for the New York Times and Bon Appetit and Gourmet and
brag, all of us.
Brag. But I think it's important to mention, not as a brag book, but so much because everybody eats and everybody speaks a language. So that means you think you can write about food. And many people do it really, really well. And what we like to underpin our food writing with the journalism that we've all practiced for 20 years. So really the way that we find those stories is the same way that we've found any stories, which is there's always a hint in something somebody says where you're like, wait a minute, say that again. Or I was doing a story for Associated Press about the regional differences in potato chips. Okay. And I found this professor emeritus at Central Connecticut University who'd been waiting his whole life for me to call him and went down all the different regional parts of potato chips. And also, P.S.
This guy tenured?
He was.
But they're spending our money.
Okay. And P.S., he also specializes in regional sandwiches. And he had discovered something called the steamed cheeseburger, which is only available in like a 30-mile radius of Central Connecticut. So, of course, I drove to Connecticut and ate this thing, which, you know, your expectations are so low that really it was fine. But I really never need to eat it again.
Sell it, Michelle. Yeah. Make me go up to Connecticut to have it.
I said that, too.
Right.
But so those are and a lot of stuff, frankly, comes from our readers who say, hey, you know, I live in I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. Have you ever heard of the hot brown, which is a sandwich that is originated in Louisville at the hot at the Brown Hotel, and it was something created for the people who were there dancing and cavorting all night, and it was what you ate at 2 a.m. and it's got everything you would expect
right,
it to
like
have.
Pumpernickel, right?
And turkey and bearnaise
like cheese sauce
and
yeah,
cheese.
You know,
and
we need to cavort.
I cavort all the time. I don't know what you're doing.
I've actually seen Nikki cavorting.
She's
that's how we know each
know,
other. Yeah,
know,
mm-hmm.
It's better that you're saying that instead of some other people saying
that. That's right. I'm going to get you back for that. We only have a second more. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure everybody knows where to find you online.
We are at www.AmericanFoodRoots.com.
Fascinating.
And just quickly,
reads.
I mean, just where can people, like, so when people come to your website, they can find recipes. I mean, just give them a quick, like,
stories, recipes, really cool recipes, authentic chili. We have a recipe, a mole recipe from a woman whose taxi cab driver, when she first moved to Arizona, scribbled it down for her while he was on the phone with his mother, who was back in Mexico City. So all that kind of cool stuff. And we'd love you to sign up for our newsletter because we always have more in there. And we keep everybody up like that on what we've got coming down the pike.
Excellent. Cool. Thank you so
Thanks.
Much, Michelle.
All right,
Thanks,
back
guys.
To Tom Finnegan. Tom, you know, I guess, well, first the first question is, do you still have open dates between now and Christmas? Because people are having all these parties.
Yeah,
and
I still
office
have,
parties and
I
all
still
that.
Have open dates.
So, I mean, I guess you want to go to, what is it, Vinecrush?
Vinecrushconsulting.com. Great for corporate events, great for private events. I hit every mark.
Cool.
Well, so let's talk about what you've poured last.
Okay, last thing. We were talking about this before the show. It's just everybody always talks about the main event at a holiday meal. And I don't know about you, but with my family, we like to hang out afterwards. It's not just you eat the meal and you leave. You
no,
want
to sit
at the table.
We can't wait to get away from each other. So.
Oh, well, that can happen too. So I've got a tawny port. So this is a wine from Portugal that's fortified. But this is what's called tawny. Ports fall into two categories, ruby and tawny. Mm-hmm. Ruby ports are like vintage port, more like wine. Tawny ports are aged oxidatively, so they actually, you can have them open for 6 months.
Does the word port come from Portugal?
Yes. Duh. It comes from the city of...
We had the guy
I don't
from
listen.
Portugal
you know
in
that.
Studio.
Well, it actually comes from the city of Oporto in Port.
Right. We have Porto port on our bar.
That's
actually.
Too long ago,
It only lasts 6 months?
No. This tawnies can last more because they're indestructible. But I'm saying, you know, most people get any type of port and they think, oh, I can just throw this on my mantle or my bar and it's going to be fine. But a ruby port is like regular wine and it's going to start to lose its aroma and flavor after 5 to 7 days. But a tawny port, if you have a smaller gathering, is great because you can drink some now, drink some later, and then drink some much later.
Well, let's talk about port over. I think you and I were talking about this off air that after dinner, people sort of lose the fact that there is a really nice way to wrap it up.
Yes.
So, but I think people are afraid of port or after dinner drinks. It used to be de rigueur. I mean, people always had after dinner drinks after dinner, but they don't do it as much today. Why do you think that is? Is it too formal?
Sometimes I think it's too formal, but again, I think it comes down to people not wanting to do something because they don't feel that they're educated enough about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you can say, talk to somebody like me and ask me questions about what should I have afterwards. I mean, there's brandies, there's scotches, there's whiskeys, there's, you know, fortified wines, there's sweet wines like Sauterne and Vin du Naturel. Just something nice. The sugar helps with your digestion, you know, and it's a drink that you drink slower than, say, a champagne that you start the night out with or a cocktail, something that you can sip on while you catch up with people and you relax. So, I mean, I think it's also just a cultural thing, too. People just want to move on to the next thing and move when you really just...
Well, because somebody wants to do the dishes. Not
well,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, I go, honey, please, may I go do the dishes now? Mistress Nikki, may I?
That's where you get the big glass of port, and right. You just disappear
with that
one. That's
when we start giving it now, when it's time for him to do the dishes.
Big glass of port, and I pour it.
And just a quick...